hey, by the way, I'm straight.
For new shows, yay for new findings.
I'm always trying to get like a Black Mercury.
Maybe it's not affecting my sound.
And I am really proud of it because I feel like I am pretty strong for a woman, or maybe in general, I don't know.
Welcome to Unanthropologetic. Thank you all so much for tuning in today. I have Flex and Preston here with me, as always.
As always. I was waiting for the as always. As always, all the time. So that's my cue. So I'm like, yeah. I'm here. I'm here. Mm-hmm.
You're and queer. Yep. So are we telling everyone that it's your birthday today when we're recording?
Sure.
Okay.
So it's my birthday. Yay! We also have a special guest here, Ty Ty.
Am I that special? I've been on.
You've
like
been here quite a few times.
You're special.
Family, yeah.
So it's a family.
Family affair.
A family affair today.
Special.
My birthday.
Happy birthday.
I'm 20. Is this the age where you start to lie?
Yeah. It is.
No.
It is.
30 is when your life is just beginning.
Well, I'm turning 31.
You are? Okay.
Well, your life is just continuing to begin.
Are you sure, Mona? Like you had to gather it together right there.
I mean, I knew it was your 31st year, but like everyone says the 30s are the best years of their life. You know, it's only going to get better.
I can see that. I feel like, you know, at the age of 31, I've learned so much. It feels daunting more so than my 30th birthday because I'm like I'm getting closer to 40. And I don't know, at 40, it feels like I'm like an adult. Like 30, you're an adult, of course. You're an adult at 20, but like you're just very different. And so at 40, I'm just kind of like, oh my goodness, like, I'm a full-fledged adult, so I have to figure my shit out.
I know what you mean, though, because I think, like, at least once a week, I have to remind myself that I'm 30. Like, sometimes I still feel like I'm, like, 18 and not a full adult. But I don't know.
That's how I feel.
Well, I'm impressed with both of you.
For just existing, for being born.
Well, I think you two, like, are doing very well for your age, like in comparison to some other people that I know. I think you two have it together. I think both of you are very hard on yourselves for some reason, which I don't understand. Like, it could be so much worse, like for real, like it really could, like take it from me. And I think you two need to like start celebrating your accolades more instead of focusing on like, where you want to be, like, I don't know, just like continue to like be in the moment. That's what my therapist tells me.
Well, that was therapy with Ty. That was good. I mean, thank you for that. I appreciate you saying all that. But I think Preston and I have talked about this is just that there's never going to be like, well, at least for me, I feel like there's never going to be a top of the mountain. Like I'm always going to be searching for the next.
Yeah, I think life is about peaks and valleys. That's what Lauryn Hill said.
Like,
you climb one mountain, you climb one peak, you go down the mountain, you go through the valley, you go up, and it's never ending. But you two should definitely, like, you two are just so amazing, and I'm proud of both of you.
Aw, thank you.
Thanks. You know, I am a bad bitch, like I say every episode.
You are.
But yeah, I think that's the hard part. It's always, like, recognizing that life, like, I don't know, I feel like maybe this year and hopefully in the future years, I'll begin to kind of digest the mantra of, like, enjoying my life and not feeling like I have to, like, hit certain milestones. But I feel like that right now. I still feel like I'm building my career. I still feel like I'm trying to, like, get to my goal. And I know that my goals are long term. They're not going to be accomplished even by the time I'm 35. But it's, you know, it's hard. It's hard to live in the moment and live in the now.
Yeah. And, you know, our next episode will be a full Preston episode to kind of honor your birthday. And I do want to get into what those, like what you see for yourself in the future. I think that's like, I'm intrigued. I want to know. I want to steal the sauce.
OnlyFans is what I see in my future.
Feet porn.
OnlyFans account, because they be out here making millions of dollars.
OnlyFans. Got it.
Yeah.
One day I'll have the courage to do that, but I will never. I'm like afraid right now. I think we talked about this as well.
Yeah. And you have more to live for at the moment, Mona. Don't be like me, okay?
You more know. To live for. Like what?
I am.
Deadline.
Yeah, you have a whole. You're about to become a whole doctor.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
Let's see what happens.
As you know, at this point, I'm about to give up. So,
girl, I already gave up, girl.
Hello, I'm tired.
I quit yesterday, so I was like, bye bye.
So let's get into it.
Yesterday, because there's bigger and better already on your plate. So,
yes. Before we get to Tyler, Mona, how are you? We haven't checked.
Oh, I'm good. I have nothing to report. You know, I'm just working a lot. You know, trying to put my name in print and all that. It's been a journey, but I don't know. I've got nothing to complain about, I think.
That's good.
Nothing.
That's always good. What about you, Tyler? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling free. I'm feeling like a big middle finger to everything, all the oppressive systems, toxic bosses, toxic workplaces. For those of you who don't know, I do have a new job lined up. And thank you. I don't want to make this all about me, but essentially I applied for a role with this global consulting firm. And they offered me a leadership position. So a different position than what I had applied for. Mm-hmm. And it really made me feel some type of way very deeply, because I had been, you know, asking my current employer, or not even anymore because I quit yesterday, but my previous employer, I kept asking him. I was like, and this is my boss and he is our, like, basically our CEO. Like, you know, am I going to get a raise? Like, and are there any leadership opportunities for me? And I was gaslit all year. It was like a carrot was held over my head. Like, oh, if you do XYZ, you'll get the promotion and I'll make you a leader and I'll put you on my, you know, leadership team. And then one minute it was that, but the next minute it was, but you're not doing all the work, you know, by yourself. And, you know, this work isn't anything different that I'd ask anybody else to do. And, you know, you still have a long way to go. And for a stranger, essentially, to offer me a leadership position rather than the place that I was honing my skills at says a lot. So I put in my resignation. Mm-hmm. About, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. But the more that I have begun to think about it, certain things were popping up. Like, for example, I worked in a hallway all year, a literal hallway where people would walk past and they had copiers and printers. And mind you, I had to take a bulk of my meetings in a hallway, so I could never hear in meetings. I had to like mute myself so people wouldn't hear a printer next to me. I begged my boss for an office. I begged to use his conference room when he wasn't in it. And I was met with no. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I found out that he's upset with me, I think, A, because I'm leaving, and B, because I've strategically transitioned in a way to get everything that I needed done and everything that I wanted to be mine. Mm-hmm. And he is now building an office in that hallway. So it's basically a spit in my face. And he, you know, I was supposed to be on vacation this week. And so I think the motive was, when I had come back into the office, I could see that a new office was built. So whoever takes over my role will finally get an office.
That's like a whole nother level of petty. Like, I feel like, well, I'm a petty, but that's like, that's really messed up.
Yeah, but that just shows that I wasn't dealing with the leader. Like, and there are multiple examples this entire year where I've found I'm not working with a leader. I'm working with a person who just has power. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a pure difference. Like, he doesn't lead. He doesn't know how to have crucial conversations. Like, my other colleague, I always have to clean up after her. Like, she made mistakes, I would have to fix them. He would always lean on me to do it. Mm-hmm. And one day, like, I basically told her, I'm like, girl, like, I'm not trying to be rude, but I wish you would just think critically before you do things, because it ends up impacting my workflow as well as his. And he has just been afraid to have that conversation with her. And I'm like, thinking to myself, why am I having this conversation with her? Like, I'm not her boss. Like, she needs to hear this from her supervisor, but her supervisor doesn't know how to manage those conversations. So I just think that I was dealing with the person who had power. I wasn't necessarily ever dealing with the leader. Mm-hmm. And it showed multiple examples. Like, a true leader would have never done that. Like, and to know that he could have built an office the entire year, but waited strategically until I decided to leave, I was just like, fuck it. So I emailed HR yesterday and I said to Mark, today, I want to update my resignation. Today will be my last day. And the woman asked why. And I was like, because I'm tired. Mm-hmm. I'm tired. I'm physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually tired. And she knows exactly why I said that. And I was like, I'm just tired. And that'll mm-hmm. be the reason why I'm upping my resignation date. I was supposed to wait until the first, but I don't want to do that anymore. So my new job starts on the second week of June. And I just really want to take this time to be intentional and to unlearn all of the toxic practices that I had to learn to survive in my other workspace. So,
yeah, definitely. we'll get into our topic, but I do have a question for you. Like, when you were even starting to think about leaving and starting to pursue other opportunities, was that scary for you? Or were you just ready? Like, you were just, anything will be better than this.
That is a good question. You know,
I have an answer for them.
What's the answer you have?
What is that?
I think it's the, I was just ready.
Anything? Girl, no. He tried it. He was scared.
Yeah.
He was scared. Yeah. So I think that's a normal thing for a lot of people when they think about leaving an area that they're kind of comfortable in, even when they know it's not, you know, the most healthy. I think he was scared. And I think Tyler had to go on this journey to understand that he could do more.
Absolutely.
And be more. Mm-hmm. And that his fate and his progress is not contingent on
one person,
or
one role,
or anybody.
Yeah,
to see his value, you know, it's like you got this new opportunity, not because you were just nice and they just felt sorry for you or felt bad for you or felt like you were a nice person. You got it because you earned it and you have the skills for it.
You know, Preston is absolutely right. Like, I definitely think there a lot of it was fear. Like, because I don't really know what the future holds. And I don't want to know, you know? Like, I want to just take it one day at a time. I think the reason why I stayed for so long, I think it was, at the end of the day, if you peel back every layer, it was rooted in fear. It was like, well, am I going to survive in corporate America? Am I going to do, like, what will be better than this for me? Am I worth it? Am I smart? But I think, you know, my therapist has always said, everything I want is on the other side of fear. So I really had to use the motivation of, shit, I work in a toxic workplace and my boss is a bully and he is retaliating against me and he doesn't care. Like, I literally told him that I was leaving. He didn't really care. So I have to go. Like, this is not, like, why would I want to stay here? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I had to really push past that. And I tell my other colleagues who want to leave now too, because I think I've inspired a riot, which I was not trying to do. I tell them, like, you have to claw your way out. Like, and that's what I really feel like I have to do. Like, I prepped diligently for my interviews. I studied. I perused websites. I looked super deep at annual reports for people who I was interviewing with to really show I mean business and I want to get the fuck out. And you need to hire me because of look at how skillful I am. So, yeah, I think fear was definitely, you know, there. But I also think that, like, I needed to do this. I had to.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, good for you. And I think this should be a sign for anyone listening to take the risk. Just because, I mean, I have to agree with you about what you said about, like, fear, everything being on the other side of your fear. I've definitely felt that way myself many times in my life, and it always turned out well when I went for the took the risk.
And also, even says that she has a quote that goes, "The day came where the risk that it took to remain tightly closed in a bud is greater than the risk it takes to bloom." I think that's
it.
Preston does.
Well, and so even today, like reaching out and telling them that today was your last day, was that intimidating for you?
No, I was over it. I mean, one of my colleagues had reached out to me and she was like, "So, you know, like he's being really petty and he's building a literal office where you used to sit." I was like, "Girl, fuck him." Yeah. It wasn't even like, I was just over it. Like, I think I had already dreaded, because I was supposed to do this week and then next week I came into the office for 2 days. But literally, physically, I could not imagine or fathom stepping back foot into the building. Like, I don't want to go back. When I tell you, I don't want to go back. And I feel like Preston and I are the same in the sense of like, when we are over something, we are over it. And me, like physically, I will be the fuck over it. Like, if I do not want to do something, if I don't want to talk to someone, I'm over it. I don't physically want to have any interaction with you. I don't want to connect. I don't want to talk. I don't want to say goodbye. I just want to go. I want to go. So I fuck them. Like, literally, yeah, like, I think that's all I can really say.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I get that. Just like when the door is closed, it's closed for good. Yep. Yeah. Interesting. And again, congrats. Yeah, it's always exciting to see people move on and up. And so, well, today, I kind of thought it'd be interesting to talk about the Obama presidency with both Preston and Tyler, just because I recently was reading his book, and it just, you know, brought up a lot of questions, especially for, you know, people who are Black and in America and kind of their perceptions of, like, you know, what having this first Black president meant and how it felt, even leading up to his presidency. So that's what we'll be talking about today. So my first question is, and also I think what's going to be interesting about this is that Tyler is from Chicago, which is also where kind of Obama's political presence like originated. And then obviously Preston was not in Chicago at the time, but it'd be interesting to get his perspective as well. So my first question is, separate from Obama, but when did both of you come into like a political awareness in general?
Well, it's funny. Preston's making faces because he's very silly today and very energetic. You know, I wouldn't even say when Obama first rose to, you know, awareness here in the city. Let me backpedal. When I was younger, I was not as politically involved as I am now, clearly. Like, I do feel like I had a very warped sense of reality, very vapid, very focused on me, very like, okay, that's great, but how is that helping me right now? And I'm poor and I'm Black, and how am I supposed to do X, Y, Z? Like, I did not think about the big picture of things. I really thought about the local and the immediate. I will say, I think college, post-college, really, is when I really got more politically aware of who I was and what I wanted to stand behind.
So you didn't have an interest. So when Obama was first running and all of that was going around,
I remember just feeling like, is it real? Is it for real? Like, could it happen? I remember in the back of my head, that was always a question. Like, oh, is it, like, I don't know. Like, I was very cynical. Like, I was just like, oh, I mean, that's great, but we've never had a Black anything. So, like, is that going to really happen? Is it for real? And I feel like at the time, like, if I'm putting myself back in my teenage body, like, again, I was going through it, like, you know, with my mom, with, you know, living how I was living and stuff like that. I don't think my perception was necessarily on Obama. I do remember everything. Like, I remember the debates. I remember, you know, the suits. I remember the, you know, when he won, they had an amazing you know, party or rally downtown. It was beautiful. I didn't go because I was a teenager and I couldn't attend because of my curfew. But I remember like seeing it on TV and stuff like that. And it was just like historic. But I remember before any of that happened, I kept questioning, like, is this real? Like, is this going to happen? Is it for real? Like, is it legit? And I think that speaks to me still, because I'm very much like a person who is like, well, it's not real until the paper is signed. It's not real until XYZ is happening. Like, instead of just being a little bit more optimistic about like, oh my God, like this person, this historic person is doing something so groundbreaking with his family. Like, but yeah, what about you?
You know, when was this? Like 2008?
Yeah.
Man, I just remember that was my political awakening, my political activist awakening. Absolutely. So everybody knows, in Phaedra Park's voice, everybody knows that Preston is all about politics. And I have to step away in order to keep my mental health, you know, up to snuff, because if I go down the rabbit hole, then I'm stuck there, and it affects me emotionally. So anywho, but everybody knows that I love politics. And it was Obama running for president that truly kind of showed me that, like, this is real. Like, politics is real. We can be a part of it. We can have a voice. I know I wasn't old enough to vote for his first term, but I remember us doing a lot of like activist stuff, like at the school. It was one of those voting sites.
Oh, you could do that?
And so I could, so we helped, excuse me, we volunteered. Like, I remember volunteering. I remember volunteering to like help set it up and to help like be there on like a Saturday. I just remember being involved. I remember we got these t-shirts that were like Rock the Vote or Just Rock or something. I think in Georgia it was like Rock the Vote. I think that was like the whole slogan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was doing that, and then we were writing papers on it in class. And I
girl, we didn't do none of that. That's crazy. And you were a red state.
Yeah, but we're in Atlanta, you know, right?
Yeah, Atlanta's...
When I tell you, like, I don't know how people do schools in other states, but, like, here, like, there is no political intersection. Like, I don't ever recall writing an assignment on Obama when all of this was happening. And I took, like, you know, history, humanities classes. Like, we just didn't do that. Like, I don't know if, like, at the time, like, it was just not... It was like frowned upon, but hearing you talk about like how you helped set up the voting booth and you wore the t-shirts, like we did not do any of that. That's crazy.
And it, you know, it might also be because we were international baccalaureate students. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so in IB, it was only 7 of us in my cohort. So we and my teachers, our teachers were like, they didn't give a flip flam doodle about what we did. Like they taught us, you know, our curriculum, but like they would deviate. And I think they had the freedom and the luxury to do that with our IB classes rather than like the standard
classes,
right? Georgia classes yeah, where they have to meet certain milestones. But yeah, I remember them having authentic conversations with us. And it was just, I don't know, it was just, a great time to be alive. I just remember being very engaged and very intuned to how things were going to play out around that time.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because that's how it was for me too. I think this is when I first started caring about politics at all. Like before, I mean, I did care on some level to the point of like just siding with whatever my parents thought. But I think... I don't know if it was, I was an IB too. I don't know if that was necessarily a piece of it for me, but a lot of my classmates were very involved in helping him campaign, helping Obama campaign in Omaha, Nebraska. And my sister, even, she used to make the little phone calls where, you know, you'd like call people and like encourage them to vote. She and my dad got together, they would do that. And so, yeah, I definitely think like the lead up to his presidency is when I became politically aware. And I even remember, like, my parents, I think, were very, they were kind of rooting for Hillary Clinton. And I remember kind of like going against them and be like, no, it's going to be Obama. And I mean, did I have any basis for that? No.
No, that's just me. I'm all rooting for the black folk. But yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, it's just interesting to see how it all played out and even to see how Hillary's trajectory played out. And to just think about the whole paradigm. You know, one thing that Tyler was saying was that he wasn't super involved in politics, but he was also trying to think about, you know, being poor and black and probably where his next meal was going to come from. And I wonder, even, you know, the privileges you have to be able to even engage in a political party or campaign when you have other things you might need to worry about. Maybe there's a certain freedom that all of those other needs are met so you can have the ability to engage
in
a lot of that activity.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Definitely. I think another piece for me too, though, that doesn't necessarily apply. Well, I don't know, Tyler, it might've applied to you, but that was also the first election. Well, I didn't technically get to vote. I missed the voting day by like a week.
I couldn't vote.
Yeah.
That's too young.
Yeah, but I was like so close. I think there was like 4 days between the voting day and my birthday. And so I think that was another reason why I also cared a lot. But it didn't matter at the end of the day. So another thing. So in the book, one of the things that kind of comes up is that Michelle Obama was she wasn't against like Barack Obama, you know, running for president, but, you know, she was very family oriented and like, she was constantly like, you know, do you have to put our family through this? You know, do you, like, is this worth it? Is it feasible? And these are all valid concerns, of course. And so it's not that she was resistant, but she was definitely more like wary. And one of the things that came up in the book was she asked Obama, like, why is it important for you of all people to do this? And his response was for other people to see, for other people who look like me to see me, you know, take on this role. And so when he became president, did that mean anything to you? Like, did it ever strike you that, you know, this was a black president in the office?
Oh, absolutely. I think again, talking about fear, like I was afraid he was going to get killed. I think that was a wide
spread of fear. I think that was a lot of people. Yeah.
For who were black, like, oh, is he going to get assassinated? Like, I think we were all on like high alert, like, could somebody shoot him while he's speaking? Like, is this going to be like a JFK thing? Are they going to like hurt Michelle? Are they going to hurt the girls? Like, but seeing that definitely inspired me. And I think this was like right around the time I was transitioning to going to undergrad at a predominantly white school where I was like, well, if Obama can, you know, do it, like there's gotta be something out here that I can do. Like as a black kid, like him and I have like a somewhat similar background. So it was definitely exciting.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, biracial from Chicago.
Yeah. I am black.
From Chicago though. He's an international, he's like lived all over the world.
He's from like Hawaii or something.
His political roots started in Chicago. But yeah, Hawaii. Well,
to see someone like who looked like me, who has like somewhat of a similar background, like ascend so far so fast, not saying like everything he's done has been perfect, because it had, like, no one is perfect.
Yeah.
But like I definitely think that, what you think, everything he's done is perfect?
Yes, of course. He's the greatest president of our history so far.
I really enjoyed a lot of the things that Obama tried to do, but you know, you also, you know, Beyonce is perfect.
Yes, know? Beyonce is perfect, but I also feel like we have to have room for our political leaders for more. So like there have been things that Obama has done that have been amazing, or like the ideas he had has been amazing.
Yeah.
But as a informed adult, now that I look back on like reading like history, like I'm like, oh, did, you know, certain events have to occur? Like, did we have to go that route? But I mean, I will be critical of anybody. Like I'm critical of Biden now. Like I'm very critical of Biden actually. And I have Obama to thank for that, because he set such a precedence of what I believe a president should be. Mm-hmm. And when Trump came into office, it was like, but you know what, like you need to have those, like you have the perfect precedence, the supreme leader, and then you have a shitty leader. And I'm like, ooh, like, I hope that we don't repeat that. And so with Biden, I'm still, to be honest, like, trying to dip my feet in the water, because, like, I feel like he, and I guess you could say this of any political leader, like, he has made so many promises, but I don't see anything coming to fruition, i.e. student loans. I need them all canceled.
Yeah.
All of them. And I need my good sis Kamala to step up more.
Well, I think that's definitely.
No, I think Obama's presidency would be hard to follow for anyone, but someone did say to me that, like, after a really good presidency, there's always a really shitty one. And I think Trump was just down in the dumps, like, compared to Obama. Like, yeah. But anyway.
Well, it's like the political paradigm. Like, you know, even not paradigm, the pendulum.
Yeah.
You know, it swings to the left, it swings to the right. And, you know, unfortunately, we're probably going to look at another swing, you know, with Biden.
Yeah, so it's a battle.
Is what you see all the time. People become more conservative in their belief system or in where they are at that time and place. And so they throw a ton of support behind the more conservative candidate, which is usually a Republican. And then after that presidency, they feel, you know, infringed upon in some way. And they are looking for more hope and more
resiliency,
and you usually get that from a Democratic candidate. So it swings back and forth. But I think to think about the idea of, like, Obama going into office and what that meant to me as a black person, a black male, I think I remember my grandma was just kind of like, I ain't never seen it.
Yeah.
Like, and so I think a lot of the old population were even more cynical about it. Because they, like, I ain't never seen nothing like that. Like, I ain't never seen that. So we'll see if that happens.
Sorry, go ahead.
So when it happened, I think a lot of people were trying to kind of reconcile, what does that mean for us as a population of people? Like, does that mean we no longer have to deal with the same fuck shit that we've had to deal with, you know, our entire existence here in the U.S.? I think we all can say a resounding no. We're still dealing with that BS.
Maybe worse, actually, in some ways.
And it has gotten worse. And I think a lot of that, again, was the pendulum swung. So the pendulum swung so far to the left.
I think the pendulum broke, but anyway.
It probably, yes. It absolutely broke when Trump was inaugurated. But I think, you know, we were just so used to having, like, I don't know, things being easy, casual, everyone feeling like, you know, they had a voice at the table, to, I think, certain individuals, typically the white population, was feeling like they had their rights infringed upon. And I think Trump was able to speak to that population of people, which is how he was able to win. So, you know, I think, I don't know if I keep going back to your question, but your question of just how did it make you feel, I think it made me feel very accomplished. It made me feel like that there's more that we can do. And I think it truly showed me that, like, politics and policy can make a huge difference. And we have to be the ones to make that change.
I think also, like, one of my questions did revolve around, like, safety. And I think, I mean, the way both of you put it was that during his presidency, you were concerned about his safety. But I think one of the things that he was very aware of when he was campaigning was this idea that people, they did not discounted, but they didn't, like, want to support him out of fear for his safety. Like, especially, like, the black population in Chicago is what something that he described in his book. So I thought that was interesting that you brought that up too, because I definitely did not think about that. But
can you repeat that part one more time? So you said people felt
that they couldn't support him because,
like, they didn't want us. They were constantly worried about his safety, or, like, you know, if he would make it, if he'd be killed because he was, you know, black and running for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very aware of that, I think, during his campaign. But I never thought about that when he was campaigning or even when he was a president. So it's interesting that both of you did think about that.
Gotcha. Yeah. I think that might just be like, our Black trauma.
Yeah.
That's been said, for generations. It's mm-hmm. Whenever a person of color is trying to claw their way to the top or into a space that is occupied predominantly by, white people, I think we always have this fear of the second that other shoe dropping.
Yeah.
And I see it all the time with Tyler, but I think
I'm like that with everything.
Yeah. I think that is a trauma response of feeling like
you can't celebrate,
right?
You feel like,
right,
well, what's the point? The universe is going to take it away from me.
Yeah. Right. And I think for Black people, Obama becoming the president really was a moment. It was a moment. Mm-hmm. And I think rightfully so, because I think we had lived in a country where we felt like, there was no room in the White House for a person of color. Mm-hmm. People do it before and they or attempt to do it and they were never successful. So to see Obama do it, I think, is amazing. But then that also makes me wonder, will we ever see it happen again?
I think we will. I mean, and again, that's just me being hopeful. But I think I think in the future, in the near future, within our lifetime, at least, we will see Kamala, for example. I don't think she's done with just being vice president. I think she's going to run again. Oh.
Absolutely.
And, absolutely. I feel like she has a great chance, given that she's already been vice president, to kind of occupy that next role. Just because, again, first of all, experience and insight, no other woman, let alone woman of color, has really had that besides Hillary Clinton. And so, yeah, I just think that it's possible, but it's also just how it will be received by the rest of the country. What are some of your least favorite parts of Obama and Obama's presidency?
Oh, that's a good question.
Least favorite parts.
Well, I think some of the international conflicts, I'm not super well versed, but mm-hmm. from what I've read, how we've dealt with international conflict wasn't always my favorite.
That's a good question. I really should have sat and had that question beforehand to really think about it. Because, I don't know. I don't remember a ton of conflict during his presidency. And a lot of that, again, was the time and place where I was. We were going into undergrad and then moving into graduate school. And, your focus is on other things. But I do remember two big things that I really enjoyed from his presidency. And of course, the first is the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Now how it played out ultimately, that was, the bullshit of the Republicans, I believe. But I think the thought behind it and the intention and the intent, we hadn't really had a lot of healthcare reform prior to Obama. And so that kind of reshaped access in a way that we had not really seen as a country before. And I think that was amazing. And I think had it been able to operate and play out in the way that it was meant to, I think we would have saw pretty much the entire country have some sort of coverage. But of course, good things don't always happen. So there were populations of people left uncovered due to the court system and the judicial system that decided that certain things were unlawful and we couldn't force certain things to happen. And so we did it. That second thing that I really enjoyed, I believe that if I remember correctly, same-sex marriage became federally legal under his presidency.
Let's knock on wood that it is not threatened by our current Supreme Court in their political landscape.
Right. So it's, I think a lot of the things you saw from Obama were things that truly attempted to shift the culture and our people and our people forward, which I think we saw a ton of regression once Trump became president.
Yeah. And that was another question I had. Do you think some of this like emerging of like open racism, do you think that started when Obama was president, or do you think it started when Trump became president?
I think it's always been there. I think,
yeah, it's always been there. But in terms of how, like, I feel like at least now, I don't even know when it started, but at least now I feel like people aren't even ashamed of being racist. Like there's like a covert racism.
I think it was a little bit more covert when Obama was in leadership, but I think that, as Trump began to rise, especially during like the Hillary Trump battle, you could definitely see people were just like, they did not care. They did not give a shit. Like if they said what they, first, I think it started with misogyny. And then I think once the misogyny was accepted, it developed into racism that's what I believe. I think it was even more like, I'm ready to like say how I feel, fuck how, you know, people of color feel, how women feel, how people with disabilities feel. Like, I'm just going to say what I feel and I'll be damned if, you know, my speech is censored. Even, I don't know why they would. It's just, there's so much to say about that.
Yeah. You know, when I think about, I feel like everything led to everything else. So have we always had racism in this country? Absolutely. Right. That's not a debate. I think what did happen was this perfect recipe for racism to come back to the forefront. And I love thinking about this stuff because it makes me think of horror movies. It makes me think of movies like Get Out. It makes me think of movies like The Purge. Because when you really try to unpack some of this stuff, you really feel like, shit, there's like this conspiracy or there's something, you know, sinister happening. But I feel like this has been, I feel like the rise of Trump happened because we had Obama in office. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is, again, that pendulum, because I think certain white communities began to internalize this mantra or this thought that things were being infiltrated, you know, spaces that were once always white and pure are now being occupied by people of color, and they're dirty and they are ruining the legacy and the history of these spaces. And I think a lot of that began with Obama becoming president, because again, it hadn't happened before. And I think a lot of that kind of anger and ignorance, a lot of that began to bubble. So even when you think about some of those stories, and a lot of my examples are always in healthcare because that's what I studied the most, of course. But when you heard people say, oh, I hate that Obamacare, but I love that Affordable Care Act. It's the exact same fucking thing, you dumbass. But that goes, but that is a prime example that there was something in that underbelly that was making people basically just reject something, a policy that they also were benefiting from and enjoyed and they were thankful for. So what is that? Like, what's the difference between those two things? It's the same policy, but if you put Obamacare on it versus the ACA, people receive it differently.
Yeah.
And so,
well, that's even rooted in like racist practice and white supremacy. Like, you're questioning the Black leader, and any idea that the Black leader has, like, you just are out of. But if it's reframed and repackaged differently, you'll be more accepting of it. It's hilarious to me.
And that's how this world seems to work. And so, you know, and you saw it again, even with Donald Trump. Instead of calling something the coronavirus, he called it the China virus. Yeah. And that was intentional. instead of saying words like, you know, people were upset with, you know, people came to my protest and they were upset, he would say thugs came in order to solicit a certain imagery response, and a certain response. These were key words that he would use to set the tone. So I think that that Donald Trump was able to capture kind of the market, if you will, the way that he was, because we had a president who was Black, who was in office before. And the appetite became more of, we need to take back what was ours versus, I mean, basically just rather than any other thing that we've seen before. Because Trump's presidency is so different than presidencies we've seen in the past.
Yeah, and some of what you're talking about also reminds me of, you know, the whole birth certificate BS that both Kamala Harris and Barack Obama had to go through. And I think the irony is that Obama's mother was American, and like a person like Trump was never asked that question, even though his father, I believe, was an immigrant as well. And I don't know, it just creates a stark contrast. And like, I've gotten to Facebook arguments with about this, like probably a couple years ago now, but it was just interesting how like people couldn't understand the hypocrisy between not asking for a white president's, you know, birth certificate or license or whatever, and, you know, asking someone for proof of their birthrights just based off of, you know, them not being white. And I just, I don't know, that like always sits with me. And I think that for me was also kind of a time when I started paying more attention to the idea that like there's American, and then there's also, for like those of us who aren't white, we have to qualify that we're like Indian American or Black American or whatever it is. And I think, I don't know, that always bothers me, because from now on, my response will always be that I'm American and not, I'm never going to qualify that anymore. Or I haven't actually like for a while, but yeah, that's just something that this conversation has made me think of. Let's talk about Michelle Obama. So tell me, like, when you think about Michelle Obama, what are descriptors that come to mind?
Graceful, elegance, opulence, Black excellence, education, goddess,
qualified,
dignity, respect. the list goes on and on. I feel like I am more in love with Michelle Obama than I am with Barack Obama.
Yeah, and, I think the entire world is more. Really.
And Michelle could run for president today, and I'd be like, well, where do I go? Who do I campaign with? How do I support?
Do you think she would ever run for president?
No.
You know, I don't.
I think she would.
I don't.
I think she would. But
I think something would have to change. Well, something would have to happen. I don't think the Michelle we know today, or the Michelle that came, that left the White House, wants to be president. Mm-hmm. I think she's been through too much BS with her husband, her kids. They raised really young daughters throughout that entire presidency. And I think that Michelle has the fortitude to know that, like, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
And I think that her why is very different. Oh, I also wanted to go back and be very cynical about the Obama's why, because, you know, she's like, well, why you win, you know, and he's like, I gotta do it for everybody else. And it's like, okay, Obama, like, shut the fuck up. Like, so, like, also put in there, you really just wanted to be president.
I think so too. And that's like,
fine.
I think so too. Like, that's kind of how I came, like, that's how I came away reading the book. Cause I was kind of just like, is that the only reason why? Like, why does it have to be you? Why can't it be like, you know, the other people who are like, you know, community leaders alongside him?
Right.
But it was the thing that sold Michelle on campaigning. So maybe there was some truth to it. Like maybe she was just like, okay, like if not Obama, if not Barack, it can't be anyone.
Well, you know, my mom says that all the time. If not now, then when? If not us, then who?
Yeah.
Says that all the time. But I also feel like, you know, I remember listening to Michelle's podcast when Becoming came out. And I listened to like the first two episodes. I need to go and finish it. But the first one was really good. But, you know, they're community people at heart. Like both Michelle and both Michelle and Barack, you know, they did like a lot of community service work, a lot of not-for-profit work where they were in the communities, kind of boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. And so they have this kind of, you know, global perspective of like how policies and policy changes can trickle down to the everyday individual. And I think that's really interesting because I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not surprised that that is what got her of saying, you know, the community needs to see someone like me, because I think essentially that was kind of their driving purpose. And everything that they did was mm-hmm. going into these Black and Brown underserved communities in Chicago and other cities and investing in those people and in that community. And they talked a lot about that. And that's kind of their philosophy, which is why I think we saw some of the policies that we saw during his presidency. But I think at the end of the day, you know, Barack really saw that he could be president. Like he had a shot. He was like, God, you know, I can do this shit. And they were like, okay, let's prop you up so you can do it.
In the book, they also talk about how he was like in debt. Their family was in debt, you know, from like just education and you know, trying to like buy a house and start a family. And they were in debt. And he had this plan of like, you know, running and like writing a book, getting a book deal to help them with debt. But then like he decides to run for president and he has to raise all this money. And part of me also wonders if some part of it was luck, because he had also in his book, he describes his team, and it's like his team really knew what they were doing. They knew like where to campaign. They knew, you know, they were like very into studying like the media and trying to like figure out like what their next steps were and how to present certain things. And like even certain speeches, like I think there was one time where Michelle didn't follow a script and it ended up being like devastating for the campaign. I don't think it was really devastating, but that's how it was described in the book. But it's just things like that. Like I think he also just had a really good group of people around him to kind of help him along the way. And then also another thing that I was just thinking about is that both of them have backgrounds in law, right? And I wonder if that's also part of the reason why like things like the ACA haven't necessarily been able to be just like picked up and thrown away, probably because of the way that he wrote them into law. You know, I think there has to be like a replacement, a viable replacement for the ACA. And that's why it couldn't just be thrown away despite, you know, some Republican like grumbling. Right. And the irony too, is that the Republican Party had 7 years to come up with a plan to replace the ACA and they didn't. So.
Because it's not an easy thing to do. Like, but yeah, I think you're right. And I've heard that theory of him having the background that he has. But, you know, again, that is why it is so hard being a person of color in America, because you have to be 10 times better than your white counterpart. And they still will get doubt
the acclaim,
if you can do the job.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, going back to Michelle, I do think she is more loved than Obama is.
But I also think that's it's the halo effect of being the first lady and not the president. I mean, I personally think, you know, I haven't seen a lot of what Jill Biden is doing. But, you know, I personally think the goal of the first lady should be and is to appeal to the public persona while the president goes and does other things, like goes and does like the stuff that might make him unfavorable. Is like, you need that counterpart that says, hey, look over here at this reading initiative that we're trying to do. Okay, hey, look over here at this, you know, move. What was it? Yeah. It was like get up and move or something like that.
Yeah.
Initiative that we're trying to get these kids to do. Get up, like, look at this while, you know, Obama's over here, you know, doing international war.
No, and I also think that Michelle bloomed even more after the presidency. I kind of feel like she came out of it, her role as first lady with this kind of like fuck it attitude, because I was just thinking about, like, you know, her fashion choices, for example, during her presidency, which were all very like conservative. You know, she was very neat. She chose American brands most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I remember there was an interview with Ellen and she came on and she was wearing like these like bedazzled boots that like went up to her knee. And it was just like, she looked great, but it was just not something that I had personally seen her in until that point. And so it was kind of nice to see the side of her kind of like not worrying about like her public presentation, but kind of just like maybe doing what she wanted for maybe the first time in, you know, her life. And like, and I think that also translates in the book and even in, what's that book, Southside with Me, the movie?
Oh, yeah.
That like kind of goes into their love story, Obama and Michelle's love story. But like, even then, I think she was so aware of the fact that she was a Black woman and she had to worry about how she presented herself. Like, she didn't want to be seen like flirting with Obama because she didn't want that to lessen her credibility as a female lawyer within her law firm, right?
Right.
So I just think that's, it was just interesting to see like who she was during the presidency and then who she was after, how she presented herself after. But
it's a code switch, you know, like,
yeah.
I've also seen that new Showtime show, First Lady.
Oh, not yet.
I want to see it.
I haven't seen it, yeah.
Well, Viola Davis has been taking flack for her portrayal of Michelle.
I mean, she looks a mess. But yeah, I don't know. I think you're right. And I think that's what Michelle even kind of hinted at, of like finding out who they are as people outside the presidency.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the presidency really sucks a lot out of you, and mm-hmm. it prevents you from doing certain things that you might normally would do, or dressing the way you might normally
are would talking want to dress. How you want to talk,
right?
Connecting with people,
and both of them were relatively young, you know, when they went into the presidency. There, so they're not
president, right? The youngest president
to become president, and you know, it's ludicrous to think that now that they wouldn't inject more of who they are that they can.
Yeah.
And seeing where that goes. And I think Obama probably has even, you know, still probably has less flexibility to kind of do what he wants to do now as a former president.
But you know what? I agree, yes. But I think Obama also, like, he made himself more mainstream with certain things. Like, for example, like the mic drop. Like, he made himself more relatable, and I think those are other things that made him a more endearing, like, person or character to, like, you know, look up to or look at. Because, you know, certain things that he did during his, like, press coverages or, what you know, whatever it was, like, whatever, when he was doing, like, a public appearance, he wasn't always just, like, uptight. Like, he did kind of show a little bit of his personality, which I thought was also, like, I mean, I don't remember ever seeing that from Bush. I don't think I've seen it from Biden, really.
Bush don't have a personality, girl. And Biden, he's just trying to stay alive. So, like, it's hard to have personality when you're fighting for your life every day.
But, like, yeah, you know, it's just things like that. Like, I do think I, like, appreciate that about him, because I think, I don't know. I mean, I think about even just being in academia and how we're always trying to, well, actually, not really me, but like the people around me are always worried about how they're being perceived.
Yeah.
And whether people will take them seriously as like in their role and everything. But I feel like Obama did break out, not completely, but he did like step outside of his little, like the expectations of him being, you know, whatever presidential means. Like, he was just more relatable. And I think I like that personally. I liked seeing him like understand some of pop culture and mainstream media, like some of the things that were going on.
Yeah, I mean, even now he'll release his top songs of the summer. Yeah. Or top books that he's reading.
Just more of like a cultural.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was always integral to who he was anyway. You know, he's always said that he can't be the president just for Black people, but he had to be the president for everyone. And you know, what's funny, a side note, I said that to my boss about how I approach management. Like, I can't just be the manager for a few people. I have to be the manager for everyone. So regardless if I like them or not, you know, my job is to be the manager. She's like, I like that. Like, oh my goodness. She was just like blown away. And I was like, yep, biatch, remember. But remember though, remember. In January, you said you didn't even know if I could do the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, girl. I didn't even know if I could do the job. But now, all of a sudden, you want to take my words of wisdom? Don't take my words of wisdom, girl. Don't take my little nuggets.
I mean, there you go. But do you think, where'd you get that from? Do you think that was original thought, or do you think you got that from Obama?
I did get it from Obama.
Okay, there. Yeah, I'm intrigued by that. So, like, how do you think Obama has influenced you as a professional and as a just a personal, like a personal person? What am I trying to say? Like, as a person, as a professional, and then separately as like a person.
I think for me, he's taught me to be cool, like in the sense of like never let them see you sweat. Because as a Black leader, you can't really show emotion. You can't show reaction, especially negative reaction when you're upset, sad, when you are disappointed. He has really taught me like the concept of being poised, of you can say what you mean what you say, feel how you feel, but you cannot, it can't spill out.
I think he did show vulnerability at times though, which I think was also very, in my opinion, very valuable. For example, with the Sandy Hook.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Shooting, like, you know, he cried. And again, who knows if it was calculated or not, because sometimes with like these roles, you just never know what is calculated and what isn't. But to me, like seeing that was powerful, seeing him cry as, you know, the leader of our nation.
I agree. You know, I think also what he's taught me is that I can present as my real self. And I think a lot of people of color, again, and we've talked about this on the podcast, where you just feel like you have to dim or minimize certain aspects about you. Mm-hmm. Because they don't fit the, you know, the mainstream or what they say you should look like, mm-hmm. or act like. And I think Obama showed me that it is okay to be Black. Mm-hmm. Like, I am not going to go into a space and just, you know, cuss out people, because that's not necessarily a Black thing. But I think we always have this trope of like being ghetto or hood or whatever. And I still
loud and obnoxious.
Yeah. And I think I'm not going to go into my professional work and act a complete ass. And I wouldn't do that in any space, regardless of if I'm around other people that look like me or not. But I think he showed that you can be yourself and be refined or professional while being yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I go into my room and I go to work and I go into these spaces, and I have never been more myself, Black and gay and loud and proud. And I leave from a place of authenticity. And I feel like that's something that I've seen Obama do. And that's what I want to do. A place from transparency, where you feel like you're in the know. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately I just want to be someone that people respect and people find inspiration in, because it is important. I mean, I'm not saying that he was lying about the thought of
doing the presidency for other people. I just don't think that was the only thing that was motivating him. But it's important. It's important to see people like us sit at the tables that make decisions. That's very important.
Yeah.
And I think his book also makes that point in a lot of different ways. Like his telling of, like, you know, his kind of life story. Even his earlier book, there was another book where he talks about his father. But I think when you read the book, you kind of understand that he was just like, that could be me. Like, why not? And it's kind of, I think that's the mentality that anyone has to take on. Kind of like going back to what both of you were talking about at the beginning of the podcast, when we're talking about Ty getting a new job, but taking those risks and, you know, to kind of see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and another thing, I feel like we've talked about this, and I think you're the one who said it, but like betting on yourself. Yeah. Who else are you going to bet on?
That's what Beyonce
said. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't like to play with my money, but if it's one thing I'll bet on, it's me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's really powerful. And I think that's like just evident in a lot of different ways, whether you look at his presidency or just looking at getting a better opportunity through a job. But yeah, I want to kind of wrap up this episode a little bit because we've been recording for a little while, mm-hmm. but any other like thoughts, you know, things that you didn't say or things that you would want to say about Barack Obama or Michelle Obama or even their children?
A legacy
for sure.
Yeah, that's like, if I had to sum it all up, I think they are building a legacy for generations to, even after us, like to admire, to seek after, to use as like a blueprint for mm-hmm. the future. I think, you know, again, nobody is perfect, no presidency is perfect. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think that he's changed the world. Like,
changed the world. I think also, like, I don't know, he's given, I mean, wasn't his whole campaign thing like hope?
Yeah.
And I think he's really instilled that, especially in our generation of like future, or current and future leaders. So I think that's really important. Anything else? Anything from you, Preston?
I agree with all of that. You know, I think every time I have these types of conversations, I always get into a place of frustration. Wow. Because, great. Like, a part of me is like, yeah, great. I'm glad to have Obama as an inspiration, right? And we need more people like that to inspire our youth and other people of color. But how do we turn that into tangible results? How do we make that something that people feel like they can even aspire to? So, you know, the random black boy in Chicago who went to Sullivan or whatever the fuck may not know even how to begin to aspire towards being somebody's president. And I think we rest a lot on the inspiration. We rest a lot on having people of, what do they call it? Why can't I think of the term?
What?
Where people want you to raise their kids, but they're not your kids.
Caregiver?
No, like Cardi B. They're like, I'm not their, I'm role model. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, can I think of the word? Role model. I think we rely so heavily on role models. But we don't teach people how to aspire for more. And so I would love to figure out how to make that inspiration turn into tangible results.
I think, so this is something that Tyler said when I asked the question about like, when did you come into political awareness? And you said something about like focusing on the local and the immediate. Right? Because it is not feasible for all of us to be president of the United States. It's just not. And also, I don't want that role. I don't know if you guys do, but I don't. And Preston smiling, like, should I be president?
I could do it.
I think you could. I absolutely think you could. And I would vote for you 100%. I would campaign for you. But I think that's like where it goes, you know, like, and we also kind of touched on this in terms of like talking about, you know, the, even the far left extreme where people are talking about like these giant ideas about changing the way society exists, you know, tearing down all the infrastructure and like, you know, just starting from new or something, which is just not necessarily feasible because we're human beings and we don't like change. But I think about like, even just going back to the idea of like the local and the immediate, like we can't change the world. I mean, maybe we can, I shouldn't say all of you can change the world if you put your mind to it. But I think at the end of the day, there are things that we can do to change things locally and immediately, whether that's like volunteering or, you know, participating in a protest or showing up to clean up your neighborhood, whatever it is. Like those are things that do make a difference at the individual level. A lot of my research actually looks at neighborhood level, like neighborhood level behaviors. And I often think about like how just living in a clean neighborhood could improve someone's mental health. Things like that. And so,
or even paying teachers a fair wage, you know, like,
right,
them feeling like they have their resources and their needs met will allow them to be able to pour into our children more. And
sponsoring a classroom, whatever it is, right. like
these are, those are tangible things that could truly help and be the difference to a child finding their way to, you know, make a difference in our society versus feeling drawn or pushed towards other things in order to just make, to meet their needs.
Yeah. And I think that's what I took away from the presidency. I think Obama will be the greatest president of my lifetime, but I also think he inspired me to like do rather than wait back and watch other people or wait for other people to do.
Right.
And I think that's something that I will like, I've carried through my life since before Obama, but I think it made me inspired to continue to do that even now. Like I do participate in cleanups of my neighborhood, of the neighborhood and neighborhoods in Philadelphia every, like not every Sunday, but every odd Sunday, maybe once a month. And I think those things again do make a difference. So yeah, you don't have to be president of the world, president of the United States. But I don't know. You got to just do your part as a citizen of this country, whether, no matter how small. And I know everyone wants to just take it out on corporations, but I don't know how to do that. So I'm just going to focus on what I can do.
Be a bad bitch.
Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for indulging in this conversation with me. I really highly recommend everyone go and just listen to the audiobook. Just listening to Obama's voice has been very soothing for me, especially given some of the current climate, some of the current politics, et cetera. I feel like I have conditioned myself to find safety in his voice. but yeah, thank you all so much for tuning in. You should go follow Preston at Flex and Preston. Tyler, unfortunately, or fortunately, does not have social media. Good for you, though, because I wish I could do that.
That is Ty.
Oh, but you do have a TikTok.
You don't do anything on your TikTok.
But I might, girl. Why are you over here trying to, like, I might have a whole concert calendar you don't know about.
You're going to get the girls excited.
Content calendar. Where do we find that? No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. Hello. And Desi Daddy.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so do you want to share your TikTok? Or you don't have to, but
oh, Babbage Ty.
Babbage, okay. You can follow me at @by_MonaB. I have nothing. I don't show anything about my life anymore. You should follow our podcast at Unanthropologetic Podcast. Leave us a like, comment, and definitely subscribe. Am I missing anything?
Subscribe. I think that's really it. That's really it.
Awesome.
We're like halfway through the season now, I think.
Almost, yeah. Till next time, take care.